Welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Junkie, recording as always at Olympus Games in Mesa, Arizona. On this episode, we have the co-creators of a new animated series called The Dragons of Melgor, Steve Romanko and Turner Van Ryn.
Fill me up with a barrel full of monkeys as I hit the board. I hate being bored. Load me up cause I'm such a junkie. Every day all I want is more. So entertain me, entertain me right now. So entertain me, entertain me right now.
Hey everyone, I am Shauna and I am joined here with a couple of my fellow junkies. Introduce yourselves.
Alex.
And Haley.
And we are the Pop Culture Junkies. We are joined by special guests on this episode, Steven Romanko and Turner Van Ryn of 13th Generation Productions. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I know it's a little strange not seeing our faces, but I've seen your faces before. I saw you guys at Los Angeles Comic-Con.
Yeah, right on. That was a lot of fun.
So who are you guys? Why are you on our show? Like, what's up?
Well, you know, Turner and I are basically a production company, 13th Generation, and we've been working together almost 2 decades now.
Whoa.
And
yeah, it's crazy. Siblings, pretty much.
And we've been doing a lot. I mean, we both come from strong media backgrounds, and after I worked at Lucasfilm, I wanted to start my own production company, and Turner and I have done shorts and commercials and documentaries and a whole bunch of stuff. But right now we're really in the market of developing television or streaming series and feature films as well. And we really want to get that original material out.
So you guys are producing a new TV show right now called The Dragons of Melgor. You call this show an animated science fiction adventure that is grounded in our flesh and blood world. Yeah. So can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. Turner, go.
Go?
Turner, you're in.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly that. It's an animated series. The pilot's going to be about an hour and the rest of the episodes will be a half hour. What, 11 episodes?
11 episodes.
And by it being grounded in a flesh and blood sort of real world thing, what that means is mainly that that pertains to the characters. When we write something, when we write stuff, even if it's animated, we want the characters to be, it sounds elementary, but, you know, relatable and actually have good character arcs and be three-dimensional. And so mainly the story's about loss and coping with loss and pain. But that's couched behind, you know, adventure and hilarity and that kind of stuff. But all the characters experience that. And I think that's what makes it sort of grounded in flesh and blood.
All right. Question. What came first? Like the visual sort of like concept of it or the story?
Oh, well, it actually,
the visual,
yeah. it actually started, like, the Dragons of Melgor started, oh, God,
long time ago.
6 years ago?
A while ago.
Six years ago.
Okay.
And I have a friend, Kurt Yeager, who's an actor in L.A., recently of, oh, Lord.
I can't remember. A million TV shows.
Recently Kurt's great. Of the,
yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Recently of the sci-fi show with Katie Sackhoff.
Another Life.
Another Life. Thank you very much. And he introduced me to a friend. He was friends with Richard Hatch, who played the original Apollo on Battlestar Galactica. So Richard and I had lunch, and I became friends with him. And I thought to myself, in our discussions, I was like, why aren't all these actors from 70s and 80s TV getting more work? Because they're really good actors. And we're like, we got to figure out stuff to do with all of these talented people. So we kind of came up with an idea for a feature film and showed it to Richard. He bought in. He bought in all the way and really, really wanted to do it. And we started doing development on it. And then lo and behold, Richard passed away. And we were stuck with, you know, what are we going to do with this? Because Richard was not only in, his he was one of the main characters in his own persona.
He played himself.
Yeah. Mm. So just out of desperation, I tried to get in touch with Dirk Benedict because Richard had said, I'll get Dirk on board when the time is right.
Well, at the time in the script, it was a feature length script. At the time, Richard Hatch travels to this animated world, Melgor, right? Yeah. Starts off in live action. He travels to this place, Melgor, and where it turns out his old buddy from the show, Dirk Benedict, is already there. He's been living there for a long time. Yeah. And so we just had the idea, what do we do? We can either wrap all this up and walk away, which would suck, or I can find a way forward. And I thought, why don't we just, we don't have Richard, we'll take Dirk and we'll put him in the lead and he'll play himself and he'll be the actor guy who travels, you know, is disillusioned and travels to this other world. And we'll just pick somebody else. So we figured, we'll get Katie Sackhoff on board and put her, and it'll be Starbuck versus
that,
Starbuck.
Yeah, that would be, Starbuck, that's hilarious. That's so funny.
So that's what we ended up writing, and we send it to Dirk, who lives in the middle of Montana, nowhere. He lives on a lake in the middle of Montana.
Yeah.
And he's all like, I don't know. You guys are crazy. I don't know. Like, we had a long phone conversation with him. This guy who I grew up watching on TV, it was surreal. You know, he's talking. He's just this grumpy old man, kind of, you know, but endearing. And he's just like got all these stories. And he's like, I don't know, you guys.
Yeah.
But then he read the script and sent us back notes like instantly, you know?
Yeah. So he was on board. And then after we had done a bunch of development, I was having dinner with somebody who makes decisions high up in a media company. And she told me, she said, you know, this isn't a feature film. This is a series. You've got too much story here.
Yeah. Mm.
So we tore it apart and started making a series out of it. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
So how long was it that she felt like they had to be cut into pieces?
Funny thing, you know, Turner and I, the way we write, we usually do a first draft that's kind of just vomiting on the page. You know, you got to get it out and get it real.
Uh-huh. All the stuff. It'll be like, for a feature, it'll be like, you know, 180 pages long or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we do a pass to clean it up. But then often what we'll do is we'll take a third draft and we'll go, let's throw every idea that we possibly can in here and make what we call our bloated draft.
Yeah,
and then from there, we start folding it down and trying to get it into just feature length shape. We don't try to erase anything unless it's really dead in the water.
Yeah, that's good, because like you're getting into a story and you have these pieces and you like, you know, bubble it up and put everything together. Because I think, at least to me, it could sound like there's these characters that need that kind of like development that you need to know more about to really get the story. And I'm assuming that's what kind of is happening here.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely what happened. And, you know, Turner and I had a lot of thoughts about the way it looked as well.
Well, I was. So that's like the story side of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And the script side of it. And visually, I'm not, you know, I'm like everybody else. I'm 45. So I grew up in the 80s watching, you know, Saturday morning cartoons and everything. And I was never really a comic book guy. You know, I liked him as much as the next person, but that was not really my thing. I can't draw. I'm not overly in animation. I was always a movie guy, like live action movie guy. So Steve got me into Star Trek, the animated series, which is a great series. Cause I've always liked Star Trek, you know, but I'd never seen this. And it's a really great series because all the original voice actors are on it.
Yeah.
The writing's done by most of the original writers for the show. And I was watching one of them one day and I realized it was one, I don't know, there's like some giant living computer or something. Right. And they like are transported into the middle of this huge room that's like a quarter mile across or something. And there's like weird organic stalactites hanging down in front of camera and all this stuff. And they're just like little, you know, dots. And all of a sudden I started thinking, why, you know, they didn't do any of this on the original series, obviously, because they couldn't afford it. And I realized, you can do anything you want with animation. It doesn't matter. You can write as big as you want. You don't have to worry. There's no limitations. You can do anything. It costs the same.
So the kind of like the style of animation, is that similar to like the Star Trek animated series when it comes to like the dragons?
That's kind of what we started with, and then it evolved from there. But that was the base.
You know, we talked to our various art directors over the last couple of years, and it kind of evolved because we felt that the Filmation animation, which is, you know, kind of low frame rate, mm-hmm. we felt that it was a little stodgy, and that audiences today, we could do better for them.
We were looking for a way to sort of like, you know, okay, it's one thing to be really rigid about it. It has to look exactly like it's from 1974, mm-hmm. right? And then there's being, well, that's the inspiration. We want to keep that vibe and that, you know, inspiration, but, you know, we have to update it because we want people to actually watch it too, you know?
One of my favorite things about watching the first episode is how fantastical it is, but also that, like we mentioned before, it is grounded in a character's journey with grief. You know, Dirk lost Richard. It's just kind of, how do I deal with this? I mean, he's kind of disillusioned with the whole con society, and how does he move forward with that? And I think it's really interesting that you have such a human story, but also mixed with that Saturday morning cartoon feeling. And I remember that's what you guys said so much at con, is like, we just want to bring it back to what those Saturday morning cartoons were like. And there wasn't a moment of that first episode that I was bored or I felt disconnected from these characters. The entire thing was just so endearing.
First of all, thank you. second of all, you know, that's part and parcel of taking our experiences growing up and understanding the imagination and the beauty of being a kid.
Yeah.
Not having boundaries in terms of how you're supposed to think about creative things and stories. And then, you know, balancing that with the gravitas of being an adult, yeah. which is what we were striving for. We wanted both folks our age and younger people to look at it and go, yeah, we can associate with this.
You know, but I always looked at it too, of like, when I was writing, I didn't really think about it until right this very moment overly much, but that I'm looking, all the writing is like through the lenses of an adult, like a full on adult with kids, writing for a family audience type of thing, not like a young person writing older. So, and also a lot of it has to do with our experience in Hollywood, not feeling disillusioned and sort of,
right.
you know,
yeah, we
putting that in there.
A lot of our sly sort of wry funniness comes from always coming up against walls, which is everybody's experience in entertainment, you know? Yeah. And you know, the last feature that we tried to make was a few weeks out from being shot, and our entire location burned down the fires up here in Northern California, what, 4 or 5 years ago. And it burned down, and Turner calls me and he's like, hey, I think our location's burned down. I was like, what?
All casual.
And I looked it up, and sure enough, they weren't just burned. It was ash.
Man. Moonskin.
Yeah.
Moonskin.
And,
oh, no.
and we're like, well, and then I put a new budget into the executive producer, and they shelved the project.
Man.
So,
so that was actually, that's kind of my question is, you know, you talk about this has been kind of in development for like the last 6 years. I know, like for me, not being, you know, in the industry, quote unquote, when I hear something is in development, I have no idea what that means. So like, where are you guys at right now as far as it being in development?
Sure. We are right now trying to sell this whole thing to a production company, and a production company that's got ties to whatever streaming service they have ties to. And we're going to continue to pitch it to those companies. And when we're talking about development, like we have developed it to a point where we have a pitch, and that pitch, as you all took a look at it at the con and what we sent you, has video and also documentation and story and lots of character sketches and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of that probably will get redone when it gets picked up, because it has to get retooled. We're hiring new artists, all of that stuff. So, you know, development is, you're right, it's a really nebulous term. Well, it's like you can write two pages and say, I'm in development.
it's kind of a euphemism, I've come to realize, for pushing a project as far as you can with no money. And then when you get to the end of that, you push it as far as you possibly can.
Got it. Okay, so my body is currently in development. my fitness is in development.
All of my goals are in development.
I mean, that's essentially what it means. And then you're building a thing that you can, again, like Steve said, many things are going to get redone, probably most of it, wow. Right? Like the art stuff. But that doesn't matter because you've sold it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're making money in some capacity and you get to make it, you know, which is the fun part. And it's all just to get to that point. After that, it's all great.
I like to say on here a lot, like ideas and like how people need to take their ideas more seriously.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what you guys are doing, you know, Steve and Turner, like being able to create an idea, put it together and, you know, create a process out of it so that it can, you know,
come to life.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. be shared with everyone.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We really enjoy the process. There's times where you kind of just look at each other, because Turner and I meet a few times a week. We put quite some hours in. And there's definitely times where we're looking at each other in the office and in the studio office, and we're just like, "What are we doing here today? I have no idea.
I have no idea. Yeah. Why?" And we have like a back burner of like, you know, script ideas and things like that that are all, you know, in development. And
so we try to work on something every week, because the way we look at it is that
it's band practice.
Yeah. You just keep doing it until something gives.
What are the next steps then for Dragons of Melgor? Like, where are you pitching this to? Where do you see this going?
That's a great question. I am currently pitching. I pitched last year at the Otto International Animation Festival, and I'll be pitching in Miami in July, and then I'm going to go back to Ottawa. A lot of the feedback that we've got has been, we're not quite ready for this. We really love it, and that it's difficult for them to wrap their heads around an original idea that's not attached to a comic book or a toy, or, you know, and that's fine. That's the game. And we're just going to keep, I've already said this, that Turner and I are going to keep pressing this thing and keep pressing and pressing everything else that we're doing until it breaks through. I mean, we're currently, you know, we've developed the Dragons of Melgor up on, you know, as far as it can go before we get money behind it. And we've locked in actors and we're farther along than a lot of people who get greenlit. So we're aiming to do another show that's just skewed a hair younger. And we're working on it right now. We should have a pilot ready, probably in another 2 or 3 months.
Awesome.
It's called Starlight Movers.
Okay, tell us about Starlight Movers.
Yeah, so Starlight Movers is an idea that our friend Brian Hess came up with. He's our art director.
Resident
art director. Resident
good drawer guy.
Yeah, and he's an animator. And you can find him at hesstoons.com. He's got a lot of comic book sales, and he goes to cons and is always at artist tables. And he had an idea with another friend of ours about this story of, basically, it's like Firefly with kitties.
Oh, wow. Kitties like meow meows?
Right, right.
Okay.
So he had a couple of stories outlined, and, you know, he knows Turner and I are screenwriters as well, and he said, "Hey, can you guys take a stab at this? Because we really want to do it. I've got a comic book deal for it already."
Wow.
So we wrote a pilot for it. We wrote all the episodes, and we've got some really great characters. And it's funny.
Yeah, it's funnier. It's more happy-go-lucky. It's more...
Yeah, there's not...
It's not as heavy.
Yeah. You know how it's like The Empire Strikes Back can be kind of heavy.
Yeah.
And Return of the Jedi isn't.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
The kitties return.
Yes. What? Hey, we're being derivative? Is that what you're saying?
No, we're not being derivative.
Everything is derivative if you think long enough
this
about it.
That's true.
A derivative. It's fine.
I'm okay with being derivative as long as somebody buys it. I don't care. It's
totally
fine. Money to be derivative.
Some of my favorite things are absolutely derivative of my other favorite things. So it's okay. Okay, so speaking of being derivative, I noticed there's a lot of Battlestar Galactica influence in, like even the font, like the 13th generation productions. I'm like, I love it. Like, so say we all. I'm so down with that. But is that, and then obviously, you know, you've, like, your whole idea with Dirk and everything is all about Battlestar. Was that like your show? Was that, like, the main?
That was kind of my show when I was a kid. I'll say that. I didn't see it in its initial run because I was only one.
I did because I'm old.
But I'm old too now.
We don't out our ages here in Pop Culture Junkie Podcast.
But I think I saw it in, like, I don't know, it was on, like, the local, you know, Channel 11, KOMO Channel 4 or whatever, like, when I was a kid, like, on Sunday afternoons or something, you know, in, like, 1983 or something. And, like, I was fully into that show, like, all the way, man.
That's awesome.
The Battlestar Galactica connection for me is I was there when it was, you know, premiered on ABC.
I was fully into that show.
It was a two hour movie on ABC. It was awesome.
I looked good. The whole show is pretty darn good, actually. Yeah.
And, you know, I really got Turner and I watched a lot of them over and over and over again, trying to pull, like, what we could from it, because we really love the show and we love how big it is. And
with the money to
right. And the only thing that show suffers from is being on network TV in 1978.
The characters are
no fault of their own.
No, the characters, it's kind of, I think, you know, you mentioned the Melgor being kind of, you know, grounded in real life and everything. And it's like, which is, you know, for us an important writer thing, but also I think I learned all that. I didn't think about it till my adult life, but I think I absorbed all that stuff from watching good TV and stuff when I was a kid. Watching stuff like Battlestar Galactica, where, yeah, it suffers from being network on network TV because they don't have a lot of money, and they recycle the same effect shots over and over and over and over.
I mean, my favorite TV show of all time is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and that is
okay.
UPN 45. And
well, it's kind of the same thing. The writing's good. You're responding to the good writing. You know, maybe you don't think about it at the time.
And now I look back and I'm like, ooh, that effect doesn't really stand the test of time, but I don't care.
No.
Because the story is there and the characters are there. Exactly.
Exactly. And you know, you absorb all that. You know, TV's good for you.
Yeah. You know what I like about animation is that it can last forever. Like, you can always make new shows, new stories, write new scripts.
Like The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Because they never age.
Exactly. That's exactly. Yeah. These, you know, because you're talking about, like, actors and, like, getting, like, voices for these people. You know, those voices can still exist throughout time.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually.
Hmm. Yeah. It's kind of timeless.
That's another reason, you know, we almost everyone on the production is old.
hey, I'm not that old.
So over 30 is what we're considering old now.
but we're all like, yeah, doing voice work would be great. All we have to do is sit around and have fun, you know?
That's the dream. Why do you think we do a podcast?
No one has to look at us.
We don't even have to put on pants.
Right. None of us are wearing pants right now.
You want to make that public.
So tell us a little bit more about the crew behind the production. Like, so you guys, are you guys the lead writer? Like, are you two writing it completely?
Yes. The pilot
or the whole series?
Well, the pilot is Turner and I, and Turner and I have outlined the entire series.
We've not written every script for the entire series.
No, because all that's going to go into a writer's room and we'll hire writers and,
frankly, I don't want to write every single. I would like to bring other people on and, you know, if it's a series, have it be different directors, different writers, too. It's all within the vein and we're the executive producers. But, you know, I want other people's perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. You know, I never thought of that. Like, depending on what network you, you know, picks up the show, how much the show can actually change. Do you like a fade
of
that?
You'll see pilots from back in the day on TV that are like totally different from the show, like in season two or something, you know?
I mean, if you look at prime example of Star Trek. Prime example of Star Trek.
It's a different actor in the pilot. You know?
Oh, wow.
The entire look is different.
More 50s.
Is that scary to you to think about handing over like this thing that has been your baby for like 6 years and potentially having someone come in and be like eraser and changing things?
No, I think that as long as, and this is the thing, is like, you know, we're in a position where we can say no because we're already poor.
We haven't
put all our eggs. We're too old to hustle. Is the other thing. Like, people are always like, well, you guys should do commercials. You should do this or that. And I'm like, that's a hustle, man. I don't want to do that.
That's another 50-hour a week job.
Yeah, I'm not into that. I have a job. I have two kids, you know, like if I'm going to do something, it's got to be for decent money on my terms. Otherwise I'm walking away. I don't have all my eggs in this basket. I'll be sad, but like, it won't end my world.
The vision that we have is malleable. I'm going to be the showrunner on this film because I am the showrunner on this film. And whatever happens is not going to be less than the vision that we have. It might be a little different because we've got other people involved, and that's good.
That's good. Ultimately, that's a good thing.
But you know that you set that starting off point and you have the solid foundation of what it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's like that fear that you're talking about, like, does it scare us to, you know, turn over this thing you've been working on where you get, you know, so locked into sort of a vision of a thing, you know what I mean? And yes, the short answer is yes, it scares me. But also, that's filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're not scared, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And I think the good thing about it, it becomes something bigger than just, you know, where it started. You know, you're sharing this with other people and, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody who will work on it. I was just talking, I work at a film school downtown here in San Francisco, and I was just talking to a prospective student and another teacher about this today, that when I do a thing, I want and I like it. It makes fun for me when people feel a collective ownership of what they're doing, what they're working on. Everybody from the dolly grip and the caterer on through whomever. It doesn't matter because it's all an important job and you're all contributing to this. It's a team sport, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like Elizabeth Olsen recently. She came, you know, in some interview, she was saying, I hate when people talk down about comic book movies.
Yeah.
Not being authentic movies because it discredits the crew and all the hard work
people
that goes into that. And I think animation, same thing could be said, you know, about animation is it's easy to kind of cast it off and be like, oh, that's easy. You know, you're sitting in a booth and recording voices, but like all the crew and all the hard work and everything that goes
hours of drawing and animating and rendering things.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I've learned about, because again, I came from a live action world. That's always been my thing growing up, you know, and I can't draw. So there's one thing I've learned about pre-producing an animated thing. Man, yeah, it is not just it's a lot of work.
It's tedious.
Lots of work.
And it's a lot more nitpicky choices on everything.
It's like, as a director, if I'm directing live action, you know, I can be like, I don't want the camera there, I want it here. And I can just grab the camera and put it where I want it. You know what I mean? Or I can be like, hey, somebody get me a chair for this set, or, you know, a potted plant. Well, what's it supposed to, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I just need a chair, you know, or whatever. Whereas if in the animation world, they're like, all right, what's it look like? I don't know. It's a, you know, it's a chair.
And then you get 25 choices of a chair.
You get, 5 to 10 choices. You got to pick one. And then, like, you know, for every single thing, you know, I have to, as the director, like, I have to decide. And it's a lot. After a while, you're just like, I don't know that one.
That one's fine.
It makes me think about,
you know, like, it's fine. It's a thing. You know, it's a thing that's in a frame for a second, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah. And you're trying to make choices that make sense, but sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You're just, after a while.
Sometimes you're just pointing.
Yeah, that.
Just finish the work.
Yeah. Does that, like, come into, like, when you're choosing your animators? Like, when, because I'm imagining that kind of conversation happening, like, you trying to tell, like, you know, somebody, you know, this is exactly how I imagine it. How often is it like 100%? Or,
well, the process starts with people who are doing your design work. And we have to make sure that we talk about the characters, and we talk about all the props and we talk about all the backdrops and the locations. And that's one set of tasks, mm-hmm. is to get all of that designed. And then you have the artists who take those designs and turn them into the puppets,
right.
that get animated. And then you have to make choices,
which is a whole other skill.
Right. Does this puppet look right?
Yeah.
Does it move correctly? Right. Do we need more movement on this part or that part?
Right.
You know, and we have to make those choices that these other set of skilled artists give, right. give to us.
It's like when you make a movie, when you make a regular movie, you know, you don't have to, you're making the French Connection, say, right. You can go out in the streets of New York with a camera and you can shoot a bunch of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Or go down on the subway and shoot a bunch of stuff without permits a lot of the time. You're making Star Wars, just to, you know, use another example, a 70s mm-hmm. movie, and you're going to make these special effects, you have to first make the factory that makes the special effects, you know what I mean? And that eats up 2/3 of your budget, yeah. right there, you know? But at the end, you have a working machine.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of Star Wars, I got to call it back because I know we had an early mention about working at Lucasfilm. That's I'm dying to know more about that.
Dropped that.
Everybody dies to know. Yeah. No. As they should. It's
so I worked at Skywalker Sound from 1990.
Steve's a sound guy.
I'm a sound guy. I'm a sound designer by trade. And I worked up at Skywalker Sound from 1997 to early 2002. Greatest doctorate in filmmaking anybody mm-hmm. could ever have.
Who'd you meet up there?
And
like directors.
Well, I'm saying it wasn't just the greatest sound people, like working with Ben Burtt and Gary Rydstrom and Gary Rizzo and all of these people who are multi-Oscar winning artists in their own fields. But then every film that comes through, you sit and work with the director. You sit and work with the actors when they're doing dialogue replacement. You sit and work with the writers. You sit and work with producers. And it's this great team effort in post-production. And, you know, working on everything. I worked on two Star Wars movies, which was awesome. and I worked on Saving Private Ryan. I worked on Titanic. I've worked on a lot of films. I worked on Mimic 2, which went straight to video.
Yes. I love Mimic 2.
Television announcer. No, you're the radio in what? The Game?
Oh, yeah. I've worked on 3 David Fincher movies.
Nice.
In The Game, you know, one day we needed a voice for the radio when he's getting driven back from Mexico. And I did radio and they're like, hey, Steve, you did radio, right? I was like, yeah. Do you think you do this? I was like, sure. And I just do it. And it's in there. You know, or you go about, we're going to do a day of keyboard typing for the movie Contact. So I type for 6 hours and we record it all and it gets cut into the movie.
That's my typing, you guys. That's me. That's
right. And that perspective, like that perspective from a sound design arena, gives me a lot of insight into how I want my work to appear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say something real quick? I've been to Skywalker Sound a couple times after Steve worked there, but we mixed I was fortunate enough to have Gary Rizzo, who's, you know, an Oscar winning, you know, film mixer, mix my thesis film from film school. And we were up there for like, what, a week? A week. And nobody was there. It was in the off season, but like, you know, I saw a couple people and like, it has this real relaxed atmosphere. So I can only imagine if you work there on these big movies, these people come in, but they're, you know, you're deep in the process of filmmaking, you're in post-production and it's like sort of the barriers and you're in the woods in Northern California. You're not in LA, you know, the barriers
are gone. They're gone.
So if you pay attention and keep your ears open,
You learn
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was a great experience. It was an awesome experience. Cool. I was incredibly fortunate to be up there for that long.
That is awesome.
You talked to Francis.
Yeah, I got to talk to Francis Coppola.
That's crazy. No big deal.
No, I mean, I'll tell you though, I've been in the entertainment industry 30 years now, and I'm just about far beyond being starstruck, because they're just folks, you know. Actors are just folks. Directors are just folks, except for two times. One is I worked on The Legend of Bagger Vance, and Robert Redford directed it. Yeah. And Robert Redford, sitting and having lunch with Robert Redford is kind of weird.
Just and a little bit.
It's just weird. And I had a Fossil watch on, and he had the same watch. And he goes, "Hey, we got the same watch." And I was like, "Shit, I got the same watch as Robert Redford."
That's awesome.
That's cool.
What was the second time?
Yeah. And well, the second time, and this is when I was a younger person, I was at a Star Trek convention where I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Scranton.
See, everybody said that.
Scranton, yeah.
Everybody said. And you know what? I've never watched an episode of The Office.
You would probably be like, this isn't Scranton at all.
It's not my Scranton.
Probably not. I'm totally ignorant on the subject.
Oh, it's a funny show.
Anyway. But I was at a Star Trek convention there, and I walked around the corner of one of the hallways. I think it was in the Catholic Youth Center in Scranton, PA. And I walked around the corner, and I walked smack dab into Leonard Nimoy's chest.
Oh, gosh. Man. I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. And this is...
How old are you? You said you were a kid.
This is 1990. Oh, man. This is 1990. So, you know, I mean, he was still a younger man.
Yeah, he's a famous guy.
A younger, super old guy.
A younger, super old guy. Much like we are now. So it was like right in front of a Coke machine, and he was patting his pockets, and he said, I do not have any change.
You gave Leonard Nimoy some change for a Coca-Cola.
I gave him 50 cents for a Coke.
Absolutely.
Yes. Did.
And
absolutely.
I spent 5 minutes talking to Leonard Nimoy. That was that was worth 50 cents.
Look at that.
That's a shout out to all of our fans. Just loiter around Coke machines at Comic-Con.
I come from, you know, the original Star Trek conventions, and I have loved and embraced all the con nerdity there is, because I am a nerd. Turner's a nerd too.
We're all nerds.
Yeah, you're amongst.
Yeah, we figured when, you know, we talked about Battlestar Galactica, we're all nerds here.
You're amongst friends. You know, we're the Pop Culture Junkie podcast. We would be remiss if we didn't talk to you guys about some pop culture. We want to know what you grew up on.
Yeah, not just TV, but movies, music. What was like the pop culture?
Yeah, what shapes
absorbed?
You?
Well, Steve saw the first airplane.
Shut up.
Surely you must be joking.
What were the steamboat days like? What was Tom Sawyer like?
First airplane. Yeah,
the Wright brothers.
I have always been a TV junkie. I grew up a TV junkie, and I used to go to the movies every weekend with my mom. God, I loved Saturday morning cartoons. I was really highly influenced by Star Trek. It blew my mind when I was a kid. And then I got to see the motion picture and started all of that. And I was the original, you know, I'm of the original Star Wars generation, where I was 8 going on 9 when that movie came out, and I went to see it, begged my parents to see it for weeks, because I would see the TV ads and see it in the paper, and I sat down, and
the Pony Express would deliver
the mail. A carrier pigeon dropped off.
and when that Star Destroyer goes over your head,
it's
life-changing. It's life changing. You're just like, somewhere in the back of my brain, I was like, I have to do this.
You just blew my mind. I'm just imagining sitting there in the movie theater and watching the ship just go over your head.
Imagine that for the first time in history.
Oh, man, that's an experience.
In stereo.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
Boom.
Yeah, blew my mind.
Are you guys fans of the new Star Wars films?
Which ones?
I guess the sequels, the TV shows on Disney Plus. How are we feeling about all this?
I really like The Mandalorian.
I think that
show's really rad.
Yeah. I also like The Mandalorian.
Mandalorian.
producer?
Yeah.
John Favreau.
Yeah. Anything that John Favreau has his hands on right now, I trust.
That's
He's got it down.
Those are facts.
I am not a huge fan of J.J. Abrams.
Mm.
This is for public consumption now.
Everyone's going to hear this. Choose your words carefully.
I'm a small, petty man with small, petty hatreds. And
welcome to the Pop Culture Junkie Podcast. Private.
But I'm sure J.J. Abrams is a really nice person and a nice man and a wonderful human being. Having said that, I'm not a huge fan of the new
Star Wars
movies. Yeah. The tentpole.
I kind of feel like J.J. Abrams, his whole career has been setting up things that can't deliver.
Yeah.
So whether it was like Alias or Lost or the new Star Wars movies,
ouch,
it's like, here's a great premise and we're going to start off real strong. And then
wow,
we're just going
to... I thought he was a nice guy.
You told me.
Haley just insulted his family.
I don't know J.J. Abrams. He doesn't care if I live or die. You guys, I'm not in the industry, so...
He's actually on the show next week. So, J.J. Abrams, he produced, directed the Star Trek films as well, right? Like, newer ones?
And I gave him a good pass. I gave him a good pass on the first Star Trek film. I enjoyed the first Star Trek film.
Right, because he's good at starting things. So the first one was pretty okay. Because
you said like Lost in these shows, and I know that those are really popular and people love
it. He's not a strong finisher.
Right. That he goes into things half-cocked, you know what I mean? And he just doesn't, I don't know. I feel like granted, he produced it. He didn't like write the whole thing, but he even admitted like they didn't know the end from the beginning.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. Lost. Yeah. Totally. That show sucks. I'm sorry.
Totally did.
God, I have so many friends who keep trying to convince me you have to start Lost. I'm like,
me too.
Why would
I do that?
I saw someone.
How many seasons is it?
Yeah.
Right. There's like 15 seasons.
No.
Okay. There's like six, but still,
It's like four too many. But the thing,
only thing you will be after watching Lost is older.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a little.
What you mean?
And lost and still
and
lost.
A little lost.
I saw someone trying to convince, like in a comment section just the other day, trying to convince people that instead of making this season of Stranger Things, they should have rebooted Lost.
Oh my God.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, I hate when people outside of the industry go, these shows suck, and then I also shit on some shows. Sorry for the curse.
Oh, we hate curse words here.
No, you're fine.
But that doesn't take anything away. It takes nothing away from the people who are working super hard on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I know that. You can have a great cast.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a great premise. If networks or production companies mm-hmm. come in and go, well, we got to rewrite all this, or this isn't working, or we're cutting your budgets, that kills a lot of what happens when it goes into a TV show.
Yeah.
Or a movie, for that matter.
Yeah, you know, the problem with the new Star Wars movies, it's not necessarily J.J. Abrams, is that the scripts are terrible.
Yeah.
The writing is bad.
There's
just
useless characters. Yeah.
Writing.
Yeah.
If it's not a good story with good characters that you, you know, give a rat's ass about, then why would you bother throwing $200 million at it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And aside from, everything that happened where, you know, they set up Finn to have this.
I was just thinking about Finn.
Yeah. This amazing plot. And then, completely just cast.
Didn't know what to do with him in the slightest.
Well,
they didn't do anything with him. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I look at it this way, though, like, especially with the Star Wars TV shows. One, they're Star Wars TV shows. And I look at Star Wars at, like, I look at James Bond films at this point, where they're going to come out, they're going to be mediocre to good, you know, and you're going to go see them.
Yeah.
Just like a James Bond movie.
See, that was a harder pill for me to swallow because you say you were a Star Wars kid when you grew up, Steve, right? But I grew up in the 80s. I'm a little old, I'm younger than you, and I grew up in the 80s when it was like, I was full on, straight up. And, like, you know, I was born in 1977. And, like, the first movie I remember in my unconscious sort of scene was Empire Strikes Back.
Mm. Oh. See, the first movie and I remember is The Jungle Book.
And like, it was, you know, a lot, you know, and so it like pervaded, you know, and I grew up on Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's my jam.
That's awesome.
Like, big time.
It is funny seeing these movies kind of get, I mean, for lack of better terms, kind of milking the cash cow, right? Like, I saw a preview for the latest Mission Impossible movie last night. You could not pay me to tell you what the last Mission Impossible movie was about.
Yeah, I have
no idea.
Well, another, I mean, like, you know, it really depends. Like, popcorn movies have always existed.
Yep, they're
right?
Always popcorn movies, for sure.
I grew up in the 80s.
Right. And you know, there's more movies now. Movie filmmaking is more prolific than it's ever been. You get more movies. So there's going to be the gamut of movies that are kind of bleh.
Yeah.
Movies that are horrible, and then movies that are really good. And it's always taste. Look, the new Jurassic Park's coming out.
Yeah.
Ooh. Turner's not going to see it. He hates those things.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I love dinosaurs. And I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't care about that at all if they weren't bringing back, like, the originals. But I thought, there's probably a lot of people just like me that are like, I'm only going to go see it because, like,
I want to see Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
Right. But how smart is that of them to be like, okay, well, the last one, you know, like, people are probably burned out. We got to mix it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, to your point of like popcorn movies and stuff and me kind of crapping on J.J. Abrams, like, I can say all that. But the reality, too, is that just because I don't like something, obviously, like, who am I? I'm not the definitive source. And I recently went through with my kids. I've got an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I went through and we watched all the Star Wars movies and anything that wasn't animated. So all the live action shows. And so my 8-year-old daughter, she's 100% caught up on everything. And I told her the other day, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi's coming out on Friday. She's so excited.
Aww.
And to her, she loves Rey.
Right.
Rey is her favorite character, right? And so, like, on the one hand, I can look at these new movies and be like, man, not my Star Wars, but that is her Star Wars. Like,
that's
Rey
a good
is
point.
Her character, and that's who she's going to grow up idolizing. And maybe one day she'll be in her 30s and look back and be like, that wasn't very good, like I feel about the prequels now. but
that's
at the same
legitimate.
Time, it's like,
I mean, I have a 7-year-old and a 7.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, and my son, just like me, was born the same year that the first Star Wars movie in a franchise came out in 2015. And so, you know, that's the Star Wars he's growing up with, you know, and like he, you know, I saw the last one in the theater with him and I hated it. Like, hated it. Like, I was like, I said this and I still say this is the worst movie I've seen in the last 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Worst movie.
I am controversial
because
I loved that movie. I loved it. I read Raylo fanfic, so that's probably why.
You know, he was just like super into it. And I was just like, you know, you go, man. You're having a good time.
Yeah, no shit in his cereal. Like, like that's what he's growing up with.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's his thing, man. And it's whatever. Yeah.
No, I mean, everybody's got an opinion. Yeah. That's okay.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. They're all, you know, J.J. Abrams is laughing at us all right now from his gold plated bathtub.
He absolutely listens to this podcast. Exactly.
It doesn't.
Are you guys Marvel fans? Are you caught up on all the movies and shows?
As in Marvel comics or?
Ooh, all of the above.
Yeah, either or.
First time I hear
Stan Lee here.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I am the comic book guy between the two of us.
I'm late to comic books.
Yeah. I've loved comics. I have comics in my collection, and my comics collection is not like a pristine. I have to have them graded.
Yeah.
You know?
Same.
I buy comics so I can read them.
Yeah, they're well-loved.
Having said that, I mean, you get ones that are in decent shape. You know?
Sure, I'm not going to get ones that are ripped up. But I have always come from comics, and I'm mostly a Marvel guy. Marvel was my comic, you know, company growing up. And I have a love-hate relationship with the Marvel Universe. There's certainly high points of the MCU. There's a bunch of silliness in the MCU, and the writing has gone far downhill in the MCU. Like, I have this dream sometimes where instead of Stan Lee's sort of the way he put things together,
market driven, you can say capitalist,
right? His market driven way he ran Marvel Comics. if it was not based on Stan Lee and based on Jack Kirby, I would be a lot happier.
I get that.
Jack Kirby invented everything already.
Yeah.
And certainly doesn't get the pop culture recognition, I guess, that Stan Lee has gotten over the years, especially with the cameos and
not
such.
Not taking anything away from Stan.
Oh, for sure.
He did what he did.
So what is one thing right now, pop culture related, that you would recommend to someone to either go watch or listen to? Could be TV, movie, music.
Northman was pretty good.
Ooh, my husband did like that. He went to go watch it by himself and described the entire plot to me when I came home. Well, I sat there, great, babe. Sounds great.
Yeah. I really love Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I think...
Oh, yeah. That is good.
I find myself... All right. So Star Trek Strange New Worlds gets released every Thursday, right? And I don't wait. That is my breakfast every Thursday morning.
Nice.
And I find myself cheering for them because the Federation and Starfleet, they're the best trained humans ever.
Oh, yeah. They all have master's degrees and they all have to go through astronaut training and combat training.
I mean, same.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
And they all have these hobbies. You
I relate.
Yeah. I'm describing, you know, you, essentially, but, you know.
Nice.
Right?
Awesome.
Very nice.
That is a good show, though. You started telling me to watch it, and I watched it. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Much better than Picard.
Nice. Shauna, what are you watching now? I feel like we haven't checked in with each other. Like, I need more Rex. Give me more Rex, you guys.
Oh, gosh. What am I even watching right now?
I've been watching reality TV. I've just been, like, feeding my mind with just trash.
Nice. Recommend some trash, please.
90 Day Fiancé. Just like watching that. Just people like think whether or not their relationships work. And then also Below Deck. There's two different kinds. There's just like...
Is this just like people having sex on a boat?
Pretty much. Man. I think they really, really want to.
Below Deck?
Below Deck.
Yeah. And there's like different, types too. There's an Australian one called Down Under. And then there's another one called... what does it got? Sailboat?
That's a lot of innuendo in these titles.
What's the sail one called? I think it's called Sailing.
Nice.
Below Deck Sailing.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been giving that to my brother.
I remember what I was watching.
Okay, go.
My mind went blank. So I started a show called The G Word, and it's with Adam Conover. I'm not sure I'm
Conover,
saying that.
Conover, yeah.
So from Adam Runs Everything.
Yeah.
And it's basically a mini series. I think Obama helps produce it or direct it in some way because he definitely is in the first episode with him. But it's Adam breaking down the government.
Okay.
And every episode is a different facet of the government, but in a educational / humorous way. So kind of like John Oliver does, where you watch it and you learn a lot. And I mean, like Adam does with his, you know, Adam Runs Everything.
Yeah.
But the first episode was about the USDA and big food and stuff. So
Shauna is on the education train and Alex is on the garbage.
What do you mean? I'm getting educated. You know, social skills and whatever.
I like it. It's good. You know, balance is important.
Balance,
you know what I mean?
Is very important.
A little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of reality trash, a little bit of educational programming.
That's my thing right now.
That's the beauty of streaming. It's like, you know, whatever you want, it's out there.
I'm really just waiting for Stranger Things to come back next week. I feel like I have so many shows that I have one episode left of, or like a couple of, like, I still haven't finished Witcher season 2 or the first part of Ozark from the final season.
Man.
Like, I just watched it last night, but I still like,
the ensemble
Ozark.
Yes.
Oh, it's so
you could get weird and do Raised by Wolves.
There you go.
Yeah, Raised. Pretty much.
man, I love Ruth Langmore so much.
Yeah, she's my favorite.
What have you been watching, Haley?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in a show hole right now because I'm just waiting for Obi-Wan and things. But I did finally get to the theater to see The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Oh, I want to see that.
And it is like one part absolutely ridiculous. but you know, whatever. Two-thirds incredible. Like it is exactly what I wanted in a movie. It is stupid. It is hilarious. It is surprisingly heartfelt.
There's Nick Cage and Pedro Pascal.
There's Nick
romance.
Cage making out with Nick Cage. Just say, yeah, that happens in the movie.
I mean, I would make out with myself if I got the chance. I'll be completely honest.
No, Pedro Pascal is the best part of the movie. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So the theater I was in, it was real small, but it was still pretty packed.
Yeah.
And when it ended, people were clapping. I was like, these are my people. You guys love Nick Cage so much.
I love it when people stand up and cheer at the end of the movie.
I just love that they cheer for a movie that's like been out for like a month. That's like real small on like a random Tuesday night. You know what I mean?
But you know those cranky people are like, don't clap. They can't hear you. I'm like, I don't care. I'm clapping for me. I enjoyed it. Like, it makes me happy to clap. I don't
clapping
know.
For the personal enjoyment that I felt. Yeah. And then I watched The Rescue Rangers.
Oh,
movie.
I did watch that. I watched The Rescue Rangers movie too.
Which was like, it has gotten so much hate online.
I enjoyed it.
I thought it was just fun. I mean, like, I think it's getting hate from people potentially kind of our age that are like, I wanted Who Framed Roger Rabbit again. Exactly as good. And, you know, exactly whatever. And I'm like, again, though, watching it with my 8-year-old and my 5-year-old, like, you need to temper your expectations
a little bit. It was goofy, and I could see that kids would like it, but also nuanced enough for adults. Like, I giggled when Dale had his earbuds in and they were way too big for his head. And then he took them off and he was listening to death metal just casually. Yeah. Like, just little weird things like that.
Yeah. And there were a lot of really good, like, little random cameos. Like, Ugly Sonic was super funny.
I think you guys would like that, actually. It's a lot of, like, 80s and 90s cartoon throwbacks, too. Yeah. So, lots of, Tigra is there next to him. I don't know. It's
the Coca-Cola bear is, like, a main character. Yeah. I was like, what is this?
Like the panda?
Like the, not, like the white, white, yeah, oh, like yeah, the white
yeah,
bear.
The polar bear.
Polar bear.
Yeah, that's what you said.
I called Peter him a panda Pan.
Too. Science.
Yeah, fat old Peter Pan, which disturbed my kids, by the way. They were just like, why is Peter Pan so gross?
Sometimes as we get older, we consume various substances and grow hair.
They were my daughter was very concerned because, you know, the premise is that they get rebooted. And so they get redrawn in this ugly format and go down these, like, straight to DVD knockoffs of their original movies. So bootlegs. Flounder gets shipped off, you know, to
he gets bootlegged.
He gets bootlegged to be part of, instead of the Little Mermaid, it's like the tiny fish woman
or something.
And my daughter was so, she got so sad. Like, oh, real quickly, she's like, I don't want that to happen to Flounder, Mom. What's happening? I go, honey, it's not real.
Flounder's dead
Rangers,
now, sweetie.
Not real, babe.
Can't hear
not
you.
Not real. She was very, very
I might do a knockoff of the Dragons of Melgore and call it the Lizards of Melgore. Would you guys be opposed to that? Steven Turner.
The Large Lizards of Melgore.
The Lizards of Kolob.
That's how you know you've made it once you start getting bootlegged.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you go to Walmart and see those straight
the $5 bin.
Yeah. Oh, shoot, that's us. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Make a comic book. There you go. I could totally see Dragons of Melgore as a comic book, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you guys envisioned that, like, as a comic strip?
It will be a comic book. We've put together a sort of a 10-page mini comic that we're hoping to pass out at more cons just to get more visibility. And, you know, it's gonna eventually get into a place where we're going to sell it.
Nice.
Merchandising, you know? It's anything that we can do with it. Comic books, novels, Turner always
coloring
loves
coloring books,
action figures,
towels, jammies,
right?
Cereal.
I remember, like, even in that pitch that you guys had at Los Angeles Comic-Con, there was, like, commercials for action figures, and they looked so legit that I was like, do they have them? Like, can I have one of these?
That's my son. I just shot him on my iPhone. And, like,
that's awesome.
He made those figures. We ordered, like,
I bought a 25-pound bag of random ass action figures off of eBay and just started kit bashing stuff together.
Yeah, I wanted one. I was like, well, I'm sold. Shut up and take my money. Let's go. Well, I think that just about wraps us up here at Pop Culture Junkie Podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Again, it's Steve Romanko and Turner Van Ryn from 13th Generation Productions. They are producing The Dragons of Melgore. Tell the people where they can find you on social media and online, you guys.
You know, you can just Google Dragons of Melgore. People can do that. That's the easiest thing. You'll find us all over the place. thanks for having us. And we're, you know, we're happy to talk anytime about anything.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Come back again, you guys. This was great. Absolutely. We're always down to talk. You know, talk nerd shit stuff, about J.J. Yeah. Abrams.
Yeah, that was surprisingly easy. I didn't expect that.
Next time we'll bring Joss Whedon in. It'll be even easier.
Right? This is going to be great. Haley, tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at 30NerdyThriving.
And I'm Alex at A-L-C-A-S-N-U-N on Instagram and Twitter.
And you can find me, Shauna Trinidad, at Shauna Trinidad on Instagram and Twitter, S-H-A-U-N-A-T-R-I-N-I-D-A-D. Please follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Junkie Podcast. Check out our website at popculturejunkie.com. On Twitter, we are at Pop Junkies. And Instagram, we are at pop.culturejunkies. We will be at Phoenix Fan Fusion in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. Check us out Friday at 1:30 p.m., Saturday at 6 p.m. You can get more information on our Facebook page. Again, that was Pop Culture Junkie Podcast. And please like, download, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your grandma, wear a t-shirt, get a tattoo, all that good stuff. And come back next week for another hit of pop culture.
Pop Culture Junkie is a production of Pop Culture Entertainment Group.